This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
I've been preparing for this all my life.
Here's Porter on Harden, taking him to school.
What a great play by Jayshon Tate.
KJ Martin climbed Boban Mountain.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
And you've seen tonight that we fought together, we stayed together, and it's about damn time, man.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and partner at Apollo Media. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as at Apollo HOU. And if you enjoy what we do here, do me a huge favor. Subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel where you can see me in crystal clear 4K. It's not 4K. I wish it was 4K. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And joining us today, it's founder of NBADraftJunkies.com, one of our Locked On NBA Draft podcast hosts, Raphael Barlow, who you can follow on Twitter at Barlow500. What you got for me, Raphael?
Nothing much, man. Glad to be on again. And looking forward to talking basketball and, of course, the NBA Draft.
Man, you just couldn't get enough of us last time, huh? So you had to come back for more pain and suffering, I guess?
I enjoy it. And Houston's draft intrigues me because I'm guessing you have 3 first-round picks. Well, it's obviously you have 3 first-round picks, but I'm guessing 1, and you have 2 back-to-back in the second round. And Raphael,
well, not second round, early first round.
I mean, early
sorry, late first round. I know what you mean. 23, 24. It's those ones.
Yeah.
So, and we got a fun show here for us today, because what we're doing is similar to what we did with Richard Mavs draft earlier this week. We're gonna let Raphael kind of basically pick, you know, some interesting prospects for the Rockets that, you know, maybe they should have their eyes on towards the tail end of this first round with that 23rd, 24th overall pick. So of the names that are kind of floating around the tail end of the first round, man, what names intrigue you and who are we talking about today?
Well, if I'm Raphael Stone.
Not Raphael Stone, Raphael.
Yeah,
Stone.
Even though our names are spelled the same, it's just pronounced different. If I'm him, I'm swinging for the fences. I'm not taking any safe picks at 23 and 24. I'm going for the guys that have the highest upside, maybe some boom or bust. But I would go with Sharif Cooper as one of my picks, if he's available. I think he's one of the more divisive prospects in this draft because there's a lot of things to like, and then there's a lot of concern. He's small. He didn't shoot the ball well at all. I want to say like 28 or 27% from 3, somewhere in that range. But he's exciting. He's, you know, in my opinion, the best passer in this draft. And I would love to see him with some NBA talent. I mean, he didn't have a lot of talent around him at Auburn. He averaged 8 assists a game, which is a ridiculous number for college basketball. But I felt like he could have easily been around 11 or 12 assists per game with more talent. So, I mean, if he's available, I think he would add some buzz and excitement. So that would be one of my first choices there.
All right. So then let's stick with Sharif Cooper for a second here. Let's focus on him because, you know, he is a very interesting prospect. So let's start, you know, he's out of Auburn, guard. Let's get some physicals in here. So he's 6'1", 180. Allegedly 6 foot, maybe 6'1" with some cozy shoes on, right? So allegedly 6'1", 180 pounds, 6 foot wingspan. And let's go back to his stats, you know, what he put up. So 20.2 points per game, 4.3 rebounds, 8.1 assists, which that's the number that really stands out, is him as a creator. But then you look at the shooting numbers, 39% from the floor, only 23% from behind the arc. So let's focus first on his playmaking. I had Sam, one of the other hosts of Locked On NBA Draft podcast, I had Sam say that Sharif Cooper might be the best playmaker in this draft, maybe even more so than Cade Cunningham. Do you agree or do you disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that statement is far off, simply because Sharif had less talent on his team, in my opinion. He averaged 8 assists per game, which I mentioned earlier is a ridiculous for college basketball. And he averaged 4 turnovers a game, which is high, but he had almost had a 2-to-1 assist turnover ratio. And if you look at Kate, who everybody, you know, kind of gave the title as the, I guess, one of the highest IQs and the best playmaker in this draft, I think that was the one area where he was somewhat disappointing. He had a negative assist to turnover ratio. I think for him, for Kate at least, then the concerns about him going into the season were his shooting, but one of the things that everyone expected him to be really good at was the decision making, and it ended up being the opposite. So as far as Sharif, again, almost a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. The 4 turnovers were high, but I feel like he could easily been 11 or 12 assists per game if he had more talent around him. And even there were times where guys bobbled his assists. So yeah, that's not a far off statement at all.
So let's kind of focus here on the other side of his offensive game for a moment. You know, the 20 points per game, that's pretty impressive too, but I didn't highlight it. I didn't give it the little red highlight like his assists, because I look at the inefficiency of his shooting percentages. Where did that come from? Is it, you know, how is he getting to this 20 points per game number, but his numbers just look so bad from an efficiency standpoint?
Well, he had a ridiculously high usage rate. So he had the ball in his hands almost every play. I actually gave him like 7 extra points on 3-point field goal percentage. It's less than that, less than what I mentioned. But yeah, I mean, he just, again, high usage rate, had the ball in his hands. He may have struggled finishing around the rim. Some of it, or it just depends on how you see, a lot of it is due to lack of size. I think playing in the NBA may be more helpful because there's more floor spacing. He was driving into a congested lane. And he didn't have a lot of talent around him, and he had to create a lot of his shots. His role should be a lot less in the NBA. I see him as kind of like a spark plug, a guy that can come off the bench and change the pace. So he won't need to shoot 20 times a game, at least in my opinion.
Do you see him, you know, as that you? I think. I mean, I'm looking at him and thinking, you know, of his fit here as a Houston Rocket. You know, he would need the ball in his hands, right? He's going to be the guy who has the ball in his hands and is creating for others, which has me a little bit taken aback as to, you know, would the Rockets really be interested in him? Because I think the clear cut thing for them is they want to put the ball in Kevin Porter Jr.'s hands as much as possible.
Yeah, and that's why I say I think he would be good as a spark plug off the bench. I mean, I think that best case scenario, you get Cade or you get Suggs. Then, you know, John Wall is still there as of today.
Hey, so that's a good problem to have. You deal with that problem if you cross that bridge when you come to it, if it happens. But
yeah. Yep. So I think that, you know, I don't think Wall will be there. I know it'll be tough to move him. Maybe he accepts a buyout, which is crazy. He'd have to give a lot of money back. But yeah, I mean, I would go all in on young guys, and you know, I would just bring Cooper off the bench. As, like I said, an energy guy, spark plug, someone that comes in with the second unit. Maybe I would try to put him and Christian Wood on the floor together, you know, just kind of stagger their minutes and give him an athletic vertical lob threat. But, yeah, I mean, I don't see him as a starter, you know, like early in his career. Yeah.
Okay. And then, you know, because the Rockets do also have Khyree Thomas, who's going to be coming back, who made a, you know, huge impact at the tail end of this past season, was, you know, immediately became a fan favorite amongst Rockets fans. You know, it was really
Omaha, my hometown.
Yeah, there we go. Shout out Omaha. You know, it was known for his Khyree fence, which we just love that moniker right there. But, you know, let's give me your top end of where you could see Sharif Cooper going, and then how far you could see him falling in this draft, and where you have him pegged, like the actual pick you think he falls at on your big.
The actual pick that I have is him going to the Rockets.
Okay. Oh, okay. There we go. I like it. At 23, I assume, or you have him at 24.
I don't remember, but I know.
Does it matter?
Yeah. I mean, it does matter. It's a few $100,000 difference in your paycheck. So
there we go. All right. Well, hopefully for Sharif's sake, you got him going at 23, but how early do you think you could see him going? And if he doesn't go to the Rockets at 23, 24, how far do you think he could fall? Is he a guy that might fall to the second round?
I don't know. That's why this draft is so tough to me, because I feel like there's not a real big gap between 6 and, let's say, 15. And then between 15 and 35, there's not a big gap also. I think there's some teams that he may be on the – and also feel like there's some teams he may be in the teams on their board just because, I mean, he's just such an electric playmaker. NBA with floor spacing, speed kills, and that's what he does have. He does have the ability to get into the paint and just kind of draw the defenses. And once he gets there, he's able to, you know, just find players and – playmaking is so important in today's NBA. So that's why I wouldn't be too shocked to see him go in the mid first round or again. You know, his size and the inefficiency numbers could work against him and he could fall in the second round. But I will note that he did get a late start. He didn't start the beginning of the season. So it was a small sample size for him compared to the other guys. I want to say he played like 12 games. So it's like he got off to a late start, but he came off and he hit the ground running when he did make his first appearance. So he's a divisive prospect. And so for me, when I'm thinking of the Rockets, you know, they said, if I'm not mistaken, I know we talked about it last time, don't judge this draft or the Harden trade until like 2030 or something like that. So
yeah,
at this point with three first round picks and what is considered a strong draft, I would swing for the fences and go with some guys that are high upside. I wouldn't play it safe here because there's not really a timeline, at least to my knowledge.
Well, we're gonna talk about a couple guys coming up here. We want to hear two more interesting late first round guys from you. But first, we got a quick message from our friends over at RockAuto.com. Because look, with the ever increasing number of makes and models, it's basically impossible for your local chain auto parts stores to stock all the different parts that you're gonna need for your car. You can save time and money when you're using Rock Auto. Why would you want to spend up to 30, 50, or even 100% more for the exact same parts? They charge DIY guys more than professional guys, which isn't fair whatsoever. RockAuto.com is a family business. They have been serving do-it-yourselfers online for 20 years. They have everything that you need. They've got engine control modules, tail lamps, brake parts, even brand new carpet for your car. So go check out their website. It's super easy to navigate. And when you visit, be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, breaking down the tail end of the first round NBA draft for the Houston Rockets, some of the potential prospects. Now, I think you've got some bigs lined up for us, right, Raphael?
Yeah, a couple bigs from University of Texas that I think the Rockets should consider if they're available.
So which big are we talking about first here?
All right, so I'll go with Kai Jones first. Now, if he's available in at this pick, one of the picks, I think it's a no-brainer. He's another guy that I feel like has a really, really high upside. Super athletic. Shot 38% from three. Not on a high volume of a attempts, but he shows some flashes of being a star potential. But he's a little raw, and his game is not really visually pleasing, to be honest with you. But if you just watch a movie, you don't see too many guys at his size move the way he does. I mean, he glides like a wing down the floor, showing some ball handling ability, and he's a high riser. And again, he shot 38% from three, so shooting is definitely important. And on one hand, it could be some similarities to Christian Wood. I know I liked Christian Wood coming out of UNLV. His issue was he was raw, he was young, and he probably only weighed like 170 pounds. But as he got older and a little bit stronger, and then, of course, he bounced around. But I feel like teams like the Pelicans, they had him, and I thought he played well when Anthony Davis was out. They dropped the ball on that, the Pistons, and I think it was a steal for the Rockets to get him at the price where they got him at. And so if Kai Jones has a similar progression, he's a little bit older than what Wood was at this when he entered the draft. But if the Rockets are patient, which I feel should be, I think he can develop into a pretty good rotation player. And I'm on the record of saying that 5 years, if he's an all-star, it wouldn't shock me at all. But I've also been on record of saying if he's playing for Olympiacos in 5 years, that wouldn't shock me at all either. So,
oh man,
it's a swing for the fences.
Well, so with Kai Jones, you know, you look at we're looking at his physicals. You know, 6'9", 205, 6'10" wingspan. Any of these alleged numbers, or do you agree with these ones?
Well, actually, that's Greg Jones on the picture. I mean, Greg Brown on the picture.
That's Greg Brown on the picture? No. Yep. Did I do that? All right. Well, we're not going to talk about that, how I flipped that with the whole name thing. We're just going to get rid of that. And for the podcast listeners, I didn't mess up at all. For the YouTube listeners, we're just going to ignore that right there. Hey, man, I had a long day. I was throwing together graphics right before we sat down to do this podcast, and now I feel all kinds of embarrassed. But –
No, it's all good. Yeah,
moving on past that. You couldn't have told me that when I put up the graphic as you started talking about him, and you sitting there thinking, "Huh, that don't look like Kai Jones at all."
Yeah, that was my look. You know, the weight difference, because I know Kai's about 218, 220. He's a little bit bigger than Greg Brown.
You know what it is? I'm clicking over here. Watch. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to find my Kai Jones graphic. Yeah, I just forgot to change the name on Greg's. Oops, that's what it was. I got a beautiful Kai Jones graphic over here. I guess I could show the Kai Jones graphic now since I went and done goofed. There we go. That looks like Kai Jones.
Yep. I've been there plenty of times. I've had it on YouTube, and it's like, I can't take the video down. 30 people tell me. But, yeah, I mean, he'll need to bulk up a little bit. And one of the biggest question marks is what position does he play? I've seen some people feel like he has some Pascal Siakam to his game, where maybe he could play a little bit of three in a pinch and more so as a four. And then I've heard some people say that they think that he is strictly a stretch five. So it just depends on you know, the opinion. But he's also someone that I think is somewhat divisive. I think that he could probably go in the lottery. I've seen him on some mocks in the late lottery, and I've seen some people have him in the second round also. So I guess it's one of those tough choices that we'll find out on draft day, that all it takes is one to really like him.
Well, looking at some of these numbers, they don't, you know, the points, the rebounds, none of it really jumps off the page, but the shooting numbers mm-hmm. do. And when you try to look at a prospect, you know, how well do these shooting numbers translate to where, you know, if say it was the inverse, right? He had, you know, the counting stats were jumping off the page, but then the efficiency didn't look great. Maybe, you know, a la Sharif Cooper. Which, in your experience, which of those are more important when it comes to translating to the NBA level?
You would hope the shooting would. I know the numbers don't necessarily stand out, and this is just my opinion. I can't confirm this is true, but the other player that we're going to talk about is Greg Brown. Greg Brown was a highly regarded prospect coming out of Austin. He was considered a lottery pick coming into the season. And Greg Brown and Kai Jones play the same position. It seems like Greg Brown was given the job based off of his five-star status, and which is why Kai Jones was coming off the bench, and he only played about 23 minutes per game. And they weren't really good together, because they also had I can't think of his name right now, but they had Jericho Sims' name. They had a guy that was like another ridiculous athlete playing the five, who was a senior. So I think Jones was just kind of caught up in the politics of what was going on there. And either way, even though he didn't play a lot of minutes, came off the bench, he still has put himself in position to possibly be a lottery pick. So I think that's the reason why the numbers don't pop out to you as far as the raw stats, but he was better than Greg Brown. And at the end of the season, Dr. Smart started playing him more than Greg Brown, which he probably should have been doing, you know, the whole season.
As far as bigs go, and I know you said, you know, Kai Jones might have a little bit of that Pascal Siakam in him, where you might, you know, might could maybe even slot him all the way down at the three potentially. But as far as bigs go in this draft, where do you have Kai Jones and then subsequently Greg Brown, who we're going to talk about in just a moment, where do you have them ranked as far as bigs go in this draft? Because I had you on before, the first time we had you on, we talked about Alperen Sengun. God, I want to say Sengun every single time. Sengun, who you had, you know, you kind of have right up there as what, the second big in the draft after Evan Mobley?
It just depends on if you consider Scottie Barnes a big or Jalen Johnson a big.
Hey, Scotty Barnes is a wing forward. I think you got to, like, I mean,
it's tough because I think he closes games at four, maybe in some teams with a coach a five. So he's not a traditional five, but you know, today's NBA is so weird. You know, it's positionless basketball, and I kind of judge guys based off of the position I think they'll play in closing lineups as opposed to starting lineups. But as far as just say like traditional centers, I would say Mobley number one, Alperen Sengun number two. You got Isaiah Jackson from Kentucky, who I think is a five. Even though Usman Garuba's not a five, he's a 4 or 5. I don't really see him sliding down or playing wing or handling the ball. And then there's De'Ron Sharpe from Carolina. But I would say Kai will probably be fourth on my list.
Okay. All right. And then you mentioned that I'm really intrigued by what you said about judging players by how you think they're going to be closing games. Because right. I really like that mentality. You know, you kind of get, because you get into, you know, different semantics about guys like Anthony Davis, you know, his role with the Lakers, how, you know, when it comes crunch time, right, AD's got to play the five for the Lakers when it comes, yeah. you know, time to step up, right, in the playoffs. So if you're looking at Kai Jones, what do you think he realistically closes games as of the NBA?
I would say he would close games as the five, especially if he can space the floor. That will open up driving lanes for the guards. It depends on, you know, you have a creative coach, and if it's a situation like, for example, the Mavs, at times they played Porzingis next to Boban or Maxi Kleber, and just depending on the matchup, they ran two traditional bigs, one as a floor spacer. So to me, Kai Jones's position will largely depend on his shooting. I think that's the swing skill for him. Even though the numbers look good, it was on a low volume of attempts. If he can shoot at, let's say, 38%, then I think he becomes a big weapon at the five. But he's still a little small, so rebounding could be an issue there as far as he wasn't really a great rebounder, especially considering his athleticism. So he could end up being a four because he doesn't rebound, but I think that he probably closes as a five. But if he goes to Houston, then there won't, and you know, I think you still have played him and Wood together.
Okay, and then how is he defensively on that side of the basketball? You talk a little bit about his rebounding and how you like those numbers to be a little bit better given his athleticism, but how is he just guarding opposing bigs?
Well, I mean, he's light in the pants, so that doesn't help. Luckily, in today's NBA, there's not a lot of, you know, physical bangers that he'd have to match up against, but in college basketball, again, in less than 23 minutes a game, he nearly averaged a block and steal per game. And there's a lot of people that live and die by the what they call the stocks, and that if a player, you know, is good at collecting steals and blocks together, then that usually translates to being a plus defender in the NBA. So I think his upside as a defender is pretty high.
So with Kai Jones, if we look at his per 36 numbers, which might be a bit better of an illustration as to what might be expected of him, right? 13.9 points, 7.6 boards, an assist, 1.5 blocks, and 1.3 steals. So some really solid looking per 36 numbers to maybe do it some more justice, given the fact that he only got the hair over 22 minutes per game. But we got to talk about Greg Brown coming up in just a moment. But first, going to drop in a quick word from our friends over at Built Bar. Because, look, if you've never had a protein bar that you actually care about, that you've like, protein bars, they've always been a chore for you to eat. You've never enjoyed them. You got to check out Built Bar. They've got so many amazing flavors to choose from. You got salted caramel, mint chocolate brownie, coconut brownie chunk, which is my personal favorite. You really can't go wrong with any single one of the flavors on their menu. Every single bar, low cal, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Great if you're on a keto diet. And you can check them out. Just go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your very next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Reminder that today on your road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Now let's talk Greg Brown, Raphael. Mm-hmm. Greg Brown, whose graphic is not coming up on the screen because I just gave him the completely wrong name. I should probably shut up and stop talking about that, but oh well. I own up to my mistakes when I make them, man. That's, you know, that's the kind of person that I am. But let's talk Greg Brown. So he's got a bit more sand in his pants than Kai Jones does. He's a bit more of that bigger body, sturdier big, right?
No, he's lighter. He's like 15.
Lighter.
Yeah.
Then what numbers am I looking at? You know what? I'm pulling this up. Who led me astray when I pulled up these numbers?
So I think on the graphics.
Where's Greg Brown? 205. You know what? I can't. Yeah. I'm gonna hang it up right now. This is why. You know what? I'm gonna blame you, man, for making me pull two Texas bigs at the same time. That's what happened. You know what? I got them mixed up. I got their numbers goofed. But you got to set me right. So I'll just shut up for a second, and I'm gonna let you talk about Greg Brown for me.
Greg Brown is a freakish athlete, arguably the best athlete in this draft. And right now, that's pretty much what he brings to the table: high upside and elite athleticism. So it's going to take a team with, I think, a really good developmental program to help him kind of find his niche. Could be a Derrick Jones Jr. type player, maybe a little bit more polished at the same stage. I think he's bigger than Derrick Jones Jr. But yeah, I mean, he showed some flashes of being able to knock down shots. I think he struggled with confidence. I know there was some issues later on in the season, but he's just a ridiculous athlete with a high upside. And one of the reasons why I think it would be good for Houston to take a flyer on him is because I've worked in the G League. I worked in the G League about 10 years ago, and I was always a fan of what the Rockets did with RGV. And he's someone that I think would greatly benefit going to spending the majority of the season with the Vipers and just kind of developing in the G League and helping him find a niche. Because right now he doesn't, you know, really bring anything to the table outside of athleticism. He has defensive upside, still raw. I don't think he'd be able to really help on the defensive end other than being athletic. But if he can become a decent floor spacer or just have, you know, more awareness as a cutter, then I think there's some potential there. But to me, his upside is as this switchy athletic defender that maybe – if he can develop into an outside shot, become like a bigger Gerald Green that plays the four, if that makes sense.
Well, you're earning bonus points from dropping the Gerald Green, the mayor of Houston name on this podcast. So props to you for that, my man. But you say bigger Gerald Green. So that's just the comp because of the insane athleticism. But you think about a guy like this with, you know, the athleticism, a motor like that. I mean, is it because I want to immediately throw out a name like Montrezl Harrell. Like, is that another one?
As Montrezl Harrell. Montrezl added a little stuff to his game, but I think the difference is Montrezl is such a bad defender that we've seen the last 2 years, two different coaches have not trusted him in the playoffs because he doesn't really play pick and roll defense. So I think that Greg's calling card that will, you know, the skill set that he can hang his hat on in the NBA is going to be his defensive upside.
And you talk about him being a versatile defender, so he's not going to be your traditional, like, you know, big, like a go, but he's not a drop big, right? He'll be able to comfortably switch onto other players out on the perimeter and still be able to hold his own.
Yeah, offensively, you know, that's going to be the swing skill for him, is what can he develop and bring to the table on the offensive end. But on the defensive end of the court, I see a guy that has a, you know, a long wingspan. Again, he has the fluidity where he can switch his, you know, move his hips and slide. And he was I saw him in high school, and he was a tremendous shot blocker in high school. I know blocking shots in high school and blocking shots in the NBA is different, but he averaged a block a game in less than 20 minutes per game at Texas. And so I think if you go by his per 36, which I'm usually not a fan of per 36, but it always sounds better. He averaged 1.7 blocks per game. And I mean, quick twitch athlete. I mean, the second jump is great. And I could see him. I'm going to throw out another Rockets name here. Best case scenario on the defensive end, Robert Covington, who
That was not the name I thought you were going to say. Okay.
Well, Robert Covington is like the best.
I thought you were going to say Clint Capella. And I was like,
Well, best case scenario. I mean, I know they play different positions, but I mean, Capella is a guy that spent that whole season in RGV. And it's like, didn't they bring him up for the playoffs out of nowhere? And then he just kind of like got minutes, maybe like the last week or two of the regular season. I mean, if he has a Capella type, and I want to say, I mean, based off of where I have him going, that's not too far from where Houston selected Capella. But I would say best case scenario would be like this Derrick Jones Jr. / Robert Covington defender. And Amir, you know, this is Locked On Rockets.
Yeah.
We saw Robert Covington as a wing rim protector last year in the playoffs. I mean, he was blocking shots like a center. And I think he led all non-centers in the NBA in blocks this year. So to me, that would be like the best case scenario for Greg Brown. You know, if he ends up being Covington, that'd be great. Someone who came out of that RGV program. So,
hey, I would gladly take another Covington, but you got me kind of a little bit worried about the offensive package here. And I want to mm-hmm. know, in your eyes, what's the ceiling there offensively? I mean, is he still at least, you know, you talk about him being an uber athlete. Can he be at least a consistent, like, vertical floor spacer, you know, that lob threat at the rim? How are his hands catching passes from his guards? You know, is that something that he at least has in his game immediately right now, or is that another area that he would have to develop in?
Yeah, I mean, I think he would be great as a vertical lob threat. It's just most of the time your vertical lob threats are your fives. And I don't really see him as a five, maybe down the line, because right now he's only about 205 pounds. But it's just far as like I keep saying, raw athleticism. I mean, he's in a category of his own. Offensively, he's behind, but he's more so of a project. I mean, if you just watched him play this year, you know, I mean, the draft is so different. You know, back when I was a kid, back when guys went to school for 3 or 4 years, you know, you were counting on a guy to come in and contribute right away. But things have changed in the NBA. Upside and potential is, you know, like the buzzword that everyone's going for. So I don't think that Greg Brown, even on a rebuilding team, would be best served to play as a rookie. I would love to see him just kind of develop in RGV.
So, and I've got one more question for you before we wrap this thing up. You talk about the Rockets swinging for the fences in this draft because they got three picks and they don't have a really concrete timeline quite just yet of when they're going to be back, you know, competing for a playoff spot and then even past that, you know, championship contention aspirations down the line. But when you say swing for the fences, is this your version of swing for the fences, a guy who has a lot of potential but is essentially a project? Is that what you mean by swing? Because I'm thinking, you know, a guy who's, you know, you grab him because you think he might be the next, you know, I don't know, MPJ pick, right? Where there's mm-hmm. a high risk, high reward. That's what I think of is high risk, high reward when I think swing for the fences. So I want to get your mentality.
So, I mean, Kenyon Martin Jr. to me was a swing for the fences pick. He was what, number 52 last year?
Mm-hmm.
He outplayed his draft position. I mean, we saw him in the bubble, in the G League bubble, and just the defensive versatility. So I think that was, you know, a good gamble that I believe is going to pay off. Same with Kevin Porter Jr. Talent is there. I mean, I used to make a case and say, skill for skill, is there any difference between Anthony Edwards and Kevin Porter Jr.? And nobody could really tell me much of a difference outside of the intel. But I thought that was a great move by the Rockets because of, I mean, they don't have a real timeline. And they gambled on him, and it paid off. And I feel like they have, with those two guys that they got last year for literally nothing, they have two really good rotational pieces to build around for the future. And I think that if it were me, I would kind of go for the same type of players for this draft.
All right.
Yeah, if they get the number one pick, and I'm hoping they get the number one pick, if they get Cade, now you can start to really gamble, because I think you got your franchise guy there. And, you know, I believe with Cade and Kevin Porter Jr. And then, you know, I keep forgetting about Tate, who was first team all rookie. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really think that they should take anybody safe. I would just go for the guy that I think that has the highest upside that I feel like they could develop.
I like that. I can get behind that mentality. Rafael, gotta let everybody know what you got cooking up for us, man.
Yeah, same every day. Every day is the same, trying to create as much content as possible. Hitting up to the draft, I think we're about 40-something days away. And I'm trying to put up videos every day. My goal is to put up at least 2 videos every day between now and the draft. And then I have a podcast on Locked On NBA Draft every Monday and Thursday. And go to my YouTube page, NBA Draft Junkies, and you'll see some of the videos and breakdowns that I've done. And I'll continue to just keep adding content every day. Then you can also check out the website, which I need to update. But man, it's tough being a one-man content team. But it's NBADraftJunkies.com.
Hey, man. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. It's always a pleasure to talk hoops with you.
Anytime. And I would love to come on sometime next week after the lottery results are out.
Oh, man. Don't even get me started on that. We're going to see how all that plays out. But keep Rockets fans in your thoughts and prayers, because if it ends poorly, I mean, we're going to need all the good vibes, all the support. If it ends, if they keep the pick, then we're going to have, you know, a celebratory march through the streets. It's going to be awesome. But Rafael, I appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. Always a pleasure.
Anytime. Thank you for having me on.
All right. That's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Rockets. Now, be sure, if you haven't done so already, hit that subscribe button, whether you're watching on YouTube, listening, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Himalaya, wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching, hit subscribe. I would sincerely appreciate it. But that is going to do it for today's episode. As always, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.